Hey, everybody. This is Brett. Welcome back to School Sucks Podcast. Today is June 13th, 2012. What you're going to hear on the show today is our live show from last Thursday night. The topic was college and student loan debt. We carried this topic throughout the entire show. And this is something that I think is very important. You know, we don't spend enough time talking about this. I did have Dale Stevens from the UnCollege movement on the show a few months back. But I'd like to stay on top of these ideas. And I was inspired to do this show by an article that I saw on lewrockwell.com. That article was called Student Loan Debt Hell, 21 Statistics That Will Make You Think Twice About Going to College, reposted from the Economic Collapse blog. We didn't even get to do any of our show prep on the actual show, meaning like read the articles that we went over prior to recording. But I wanted to share some of this with you right now. Is going to college a worthwhile investment? Is the education that our young people are receiving in our colleges and universities really worth all of the time, money, and effort that is required? Decades ago, a college education was quite inexpensive, and it was almost an automatic ticket to the middle class. But today, all of that has changed. At this point, college education is a big business. There are currently more than 18 million students enrolled at the nearly 5,000 colleges and universities currently in operation throughout the United States. There are quite a few institutions of higher learning, that's in quotes, that now charge $40,000 or even $50,000 a year for tuition. That does not even count room and board and other living expenses. Meanwhile, as you see from the statistics posted below, the quality of education at our colleges and universities has deteriorated badly. When graduation finally arrives, many of our college students have actually learned very little. They find themselves unable to get good jobs, and they end up trapped in student loan debt hell for essentially the rest of their lives. Across America today, guidance counselors, in quotes again, I agree with that use of punctuation, are pushing millions of high school students to go to the very best colleges they can get into. But they rarely warn them about how much it is going to cost or about the sad reality that they could end up being burdened by massive debt loads for decades to come. Yes, college is a ton of fun and a really unique experience. If you can get someone else to pay for it, then you should definitely consider going. There are also many careers which absolutely require a college degree. Depending on your career goals, you may not have much of a choice whether to go to college or not. But that doesn't mean you have to go to student loan debt hell. You don't have to go to the most expensive school you can get into. You don't have to take out huge student loans. There is no shame in picking a school based on affordability. The truth is that pretty much wherever you go to school, the quality of the education is going to be rather pathetic. A highly trained cat could pass most college courses in the United States today. Personally, I've had the chance to spend quite a number of years on college campuses. I enjoyed myself and had some pretty pieces of parchment to put up on my wall. But I have seen with my own eyes what goes on at our institutions of higher learning. In a previous article, I described what life is like for most average students enrolled in our colleges and universities today. The vast majority of college students in America spend 2 to 4 hours a day in the classroom and maybe an hour or two outside the classroom studying. The remainder of time, these students are drinking beer, partying, chasing after sex partners, going to sporting events, playing video games, hanging out with friends, chatting on Facebook, or getting into trouble. When they say that college is the most fun that people ever have in their lives, they mean it. It is basically one huge party. If you are a parent and you are shelling out tens of thousands of dollars every year to pay for college, you need to know the truth. You are being ripped off. Sadly, a college education is not that good an investment anymore. Tuition costs have absolutely skyrocketed, even as the quality of education has plummeted. College education is not worth getting locked into crippling student loan payments for the next 30 years. Every university, even many university professors, are now acknowledging that student loan debt hell has become a horrific societal problem. Just check out what one professor was quoted saying in a recent article in the Huffington Post. 30 years ago, college was a wise, modest investment, says Fabio Rojas, a professor of sociology at Indiana University. Now it's a lifetime lock-in, an albatross you can't escape. Anyone that is thinking of going to college needs to do a cost-benefit analysis. Is it really going to be worth it? For some people, the answer will be yes, and for some people, the answer will be no. But sadly, hardly anyone who goes to college these days gets a good education. We really do need to rethink our approach to higher education in this country. Posted below are 21 statistics about college tuition, student loan debt, and the quality of college education in the United States. And this is one of the things that we were basing our discussion off of, some of these statistics. Number one, since 1978, the cost of college tuition in the United States has gone up over 900%. Number two, in 2010, the average college graduate had accumulated approximately $25,000 in student loan debt by graduation day. Approximately two-thirds of all college students graduate with student loans. Number four, Americans have accumulated well over $900 billion in student loan debt. That figure is higher than the total amount of credit card debt in the United States. And I'm not going to read this whole list. I'll link it in the show notes. But I want to read a few from the end of this list of 21 things that I think are very important. They don't really have to do with how much time are students spending a week on work. This is more about the results. What happens after you're done? What happens when you're 50, 75, $100,000 in debt? What are you doing? And certainly this is not everybody, but these numbers are a little bit upsetting. One-third of all college students end up taking jobs that don't even require college degrees. And that's actually a little bit misleading, right? Because that's saying, I have worked as a recruiter in the past, and there were people with beautiful resumes and engineering backgrounds, computer science backgrounds, and we couldn't even look at them for a certain job because they had just pinned this college degree prerequisite onto the job description. So it's kind of unclear what it means to require a college degree. Some jobs, like obviously in the medical profession, and, you know, maybe you could argue in certain engineering and technical professions, do require many years of advanced training that needs to be documented. But just because a job requires a college degree doesn't mean that a person actually needs to have 4 years of college to do that job. That was number 15. 16. In the United States today, over 18,000 parking lot attendants have college degrees. 17. In the United States today, 317,000 waiters and waitresses have college degrees. 18. In the United States today, approximately 365,000 cashiers have college degrees. 19. In the United States today, 24.5% of all retail salespersons have a college degree. Number 21. Approximately 14% of all students that graduate with college student loan debt end up defaulting within 3 years of making their first student loan payment. So these are things to think about. Now, I don't think there's anything wrong with any of those careers if that's what you want to do, but frankly, it's probably not what those people went to college to do. So we will continue to, you know, shine a light on this topic as the show goes on. I hope you enjoy the show today. We have a new co-host. His name is Corey. Mandrick's going to be pretty busy for the next couple weeks. It's less than a week now, getting ready for Pork Fest. So he's out. I'm also very busy with that. Busy as can be. You can say busy as can be. Or you can also say busy as a bee. You just have to add an extra E to the second B, and that's a saying too. But a lot of things planned. I have to give a talk on Tuesday. I'm still trying to figure out what that's going to be about. I might wind up recording a podcast with some audience participation. Thursday night, we're going to be doing the live show in front of a live audience. Friday night, I have to find some kind of replacement for the Wheels Off Liberty event that was supposed to take place, but the guys who are Central to that recently backed out of coming to Porkfest, so that's too bad. But it's my responsibility to find a replacement event, so I'm still working on that. And a bunch of other things as well that just go with, you know, skipping out of town for 5 or 6 days. So I'm very busy, and, you know, I apologize for the lack of new non-live shows, but many will be coming over the summer when I will have a lot more free time. We will resume our Logical Fallacy series soon. I'm working on some more guests for that. That's it. Hope you're doing well. Hope to see you at Porkfest. Thank you very much for listening, and take care.
Tonight on School Sucks Live, is it fair? Are we using correct language to call student loans, like college student loans, a scam? That's one thing that we're going to talk about. We also might, if we have time, touch on the educational value of television. Remember television? And first of all, I'm Brett. You're listening to School Sucks Live. If this is your first time tuning in, this is a live show based on a podcast that I've been doing for a number of years called School Sucks Podcast. This is different because you can call in and participate. Our number is 843-JOIN-SSP, or you can reach us on Skype at School Sucks Live, all one word. If you're listening to us on LRN.FM, also consider, if you're in front of your computer, checking out our video feed at schoolsucksproject.com/live. Now, with me tonight, first of all, we have Corey. How you doing?
Good. Hello.
Now, Corey is new to the show, but you're also very new to New Hampshire. You just moved.
Less than 5 days ago. Actually, 5 days ago today.
Now, you and I have known each other for over a year.
Yes.
And you moved from New Jersey.
Nueva Jersey, yes.
I hear that's a difficult place to live.
There's a lot of good stuff there.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff that I like, including, you know, people. But very expensive. And very progressive, even now that we have a Republican governor in office, it's still a very liberal, progressive state.
A lot of unions.
A lot of unions. Yeah. A lot of unions that have a lot of political weight to throw around.
Yeah.
And I know you've seen The Cartel.
Yep.
Which is all about, among other things, how the new NJEA just throws its political weight around. They get whatever they want.
Yes, exactly. Now, The Cartel is a documentary directed by a man named Bob Bowden, who I believe was a television reporter. And it's about the NJEA, the New Jersey Teachers Association, which is the big union in New Jersey, and how they do what Corey just described. So we have a lot to talk about because you are also an educator. First, I want to introduce another man. His name is Osborne. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well, Brett. How are you?
I'm glad you're here. Thanks for coming.
Well, hey, thanks for having me.
Now, I mentioned the topic, college student loans. And we all went to college. Some of us might have loans. Some of us might not. I know I do. Do you, Corey?
I went to college for a very brief time, so my loans are paid off. They weren't much.
Right. Osborne?
Yes, I did have loans.
Yep. And are they paid off? Or?
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, as soon as that interest kicked in.
Nice. Mine or not. Mm. So we're all in different situations regarding that. And we are more than willing to take calls on that subject because there's a lot of differing opinions. There's a lot of aspects to this issue. So again, if you want to give us a call, 843-JOIN-SSP. Now, Corey, because you're new, I want to give you just a little bit more time in this segment to discuss what it is that you do exactly.
All right. I love that you referred to me as an educator because it's not something I've really thought of myself as. But for the past couple of years, I have been an instructor for computer training courses in the private sector, teaching adult education, people who need to get some kind of computer certification in order to, you know, keep their job. Basically, it's a big thing with the military. Actually, they have, if you work for the Department of Defense, whether you're in the military or you are working for a Department of Defense contractor, they have this thing called the code number is the 8570 compliance, which means if you're going to touch a computer at all, first of all, you have to have security. You have to take a class on the basics of computer security. So you know what, you know, what's a good idea and what's a bad idea to do with sensitive data, etc. So I end up teaching primarily government employees, whether directly or indirectly.
And that
seems to be that the fact that they have that requirement, I think, is one of the main reasons I have this job, because we end up teaching a lot of classes. They need people to get in there and teach. So
now, you were saying that there's a time of year, and this is true in various departments of government, but we were talking about this before, and you said that there's a certain time of year where the government, various departments, programs, and all these people who these things involve, they start to get very loose with the cash.
They do. When it's approaching the end of the fiscal year, which usually, I mean, for most of the departments that that I've had contact with, they're usually ends the fiscal year in June. So around April, May, it starts to get super busy, because when they realize they have money in their training budget that they haven't spent, they know that if they don't spend it this year, they're going to get a reduced budget next year. So they just start throwing the money around. They basically just open up to everyone who works for them and says, okay, who wants to take class, or who needs to take this class? And they'll just, you know, we get very busy around that time usually.
Now, that actually sounds a little bit more productive than some of the things that we've heard in the past. Like, Jason, I think we've talked about stories where people are throwing things overboard on ships.
Yeah. But it's a little analogous to what happens in the private sector, right? When you get to the end of that fiscal year and you've got money that you've made throughout the year, you have to think of good ways to spend that money, because if you don't, you're going to end up having to pay it all to the government so that they can spend it on their bureaucracies and flush it down the toilet.
Yeah. So like at this time of year, everyone's trying to get rid of this money, and the government is more than happy to just waste it, you know, or dump it into the ocean or something. I've heard stories about, you know, the Navy doing that before, but I guess that is true, because if you have it, the government is going to take it. That's what they do. So, another thing that we should talk about, Jason, before we get started here, is you are in the collections business, yes?
Correct, sir.
And one of the major activities of collections right now is student loans.
It is the big one right now. Over $1 trillion in student loan debt sitting out there.
That's in default? No. It's just $1 trillion total, right?
Just totals, which is greater than the total amount of credit card debt that's out there right now.
Yes.
Which is something people lament a lot about. They complain a lot about how much credit card debt the country is in. And now, you know, with this student loans being more than that, you don't hear very much about it.
No. Yeah. It used to be in my business that like American Express was the holy grail that you went after, to do my job.
Right.
And now it's student loans.
Like, yeah.
If you can get in the student loan, you are set.
So how do you feel about doing that? I mean, obviously, from a financial standpoint, from a business standpoint, it's a good contract to land, right? But how do you feel about this whole issue? Because I think we had some disagreement about it. And I would say you really can't ever, like, if somebody agrees to contract, right? They say, here's an agreement. This is my end of the bargain, and I will meet these terms. If they default, there's really no time where you could say, oh, well, you know, there's a reasonable excuse for them not paying. But I introduced this idea, and calling it a scam at the beginning of the show was very deliberate, but there's a different aspect to this story, right? Because unlike credit cards, unlike mortgages, unlike cars, especially credit cards, I would say, since that was before the student loans, that was where, you know, most of the default was coming from in private debt. But now student loans are different because there is no economic education in the government school system. So all these kids are complete sitting ducks, you know, by the time they graduate, to sink themselves $100,000, $150,000 into debt. But coupled with that is also this tremendous pressure that doesn't exist. There's no pressure. I mean, I guess there's these, you know, societal norms to own a home, or to deal in credit cards, or to own your own car. But if you don't go to college, you know, it's like saying that you are setting yourself up for failure. So in addition to having no education in economics about what it means to go into debt and this amount of debt, you're also having all of these tremendous pressures put upon you at a young age. So I think this, and I'm interested to hear your thoughts, Osborne, is a different situation than we see in other types of debt default situations.
Yes, I don't disagree with what you said, but I would rather collect this kind of debt than, say, like ambulance bills, right? Where someone didn't make that decision to say, I will take this service and pay you back later. It's just they showed up when you were lying bloody on the street, and now you got to pay them.
Right. Yeah. Interesting.
Where this, I mean, you go in the, you fill out reams of paperwork. I mean, you really make that decision for yourself.
We're going to pick this up in just a few minutes. 843 join SSP. We will be right back. Everybody, and welcome back to School Sucks Live. The number, if you want to give us a call, 843-JOIN-SSP, and you can Skype in, all one word, School Sucks Live. With me tonight, Corey and Osborne. Glad you guys are here. For the topic that we're going to try and build the show around is these student loans and what I called at the beginning of the show the college scam. And because, you know, going into debt is not necessarily a scam. Like, we understand that there's certain agreements for credit cards, for a mortgage, for a car loan. And, you know, if you sign off on these things, you are bound to honor your end of the agreement. People tried to find ways out of credit card debt. And obviously, the contracts were made, I think, maybe with a degree of complexity that a lot of people who would sign them would not understand them. But, you know, at the end, I think that personal responsibility has to be the most important aspect of evaluating that whole situation. You know, like, you agree to this contract, but the student loan thing is a little bit different because these people are preyed upon right out of, you know, government school, where they have a very, very low economic intellect or knowledge at all. And they've never been taught anything about this, but they've also, for years, been receiving these real powerful messages about the importance of going to college. So it's kind of like that's the coupling, those two aspects that make this what I would call a scam. Now, we have a caller on the line who wants to discuss this with us. His name is Mike, and he's calling from New York. Mike, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, Brett.
Okay, so you want to give us an introduction here? You said you had done some research on this topic.
Yes, what I did, now I had quite a bit of student loans out for going to architecture school. So what I did was I basically conducted my own investigation into the nature of the loans, where the money comes from. And what I found out is that the loans for student loans are treated much like the housing loans in that they're securitized. So what happens is the original person you made the agreement with for the loan sells your promissory note as part of this bundle. And since they sell it off, they legally no longer have a claim to that debt. So they get their money, the university gets their money, and on top of that, then they call you to collect on a debt that they no longer own. So they're potentially committing fraud against you because the loan had already been paid off. The bank got their money. Everybody got their money. And now they're trying to collect on something that you don't really owe anymore.
Okay. So the other thing, too, now, this reminds me a little bit of the situation we saw with some of these extraordinarily complex financial instruments, like mortgage-backed securities, where there was this passing around of the bag until at the very end, the taxpayers would be holding it after everybody else had been paid. So yeah. You're saying that it's that's a similar situation from the research that you've done. That's what you found.
Yes. And, you know, touch on something that Osmond was saying, and you guys were saying in the beginning about, you know, living up to your end of a bargain. But what I discovered was that these loan companies often break their end of the bargain right from the beginning. You know, they're not honest with you up front about where the money comes from or how the process works. And then they misrepresent themselves as the lenders when they're not the lenders. So, like, for instance, if you have a loan out with Sallie Mae has no money. They're not a financial institution. They don't have any money to begin with. So right off the bat, they sold your loan to somebody else, and then they package them in so that you don't even know who really owns the debt. So they don't live up to their end of the bargain. And unfortunately, with student loans, you're held to this standard where you can't discharge them through bankruptcy. So there's almost no way out. And so the bank gets to make their profit. Everybody makes their profit. And then you're held to this debt that isn't really yours anymore.
Right. Now, it doesn't sound too unbelievable to me that a situation would be set up where people who are powerful or connected to power would be able to benefit at the expense of other people's ignorance, which certainly sounds like a good general description of what's happening here. Do you guys have any further thoughts on this, Osborne or Corey, at this point, based on what Mike has said so far?
Well, I'm all about personal responsibility and holding up your end of the bargain. If you would agree to something, then you should follow through on that agreement. But there is an aspect to these kind of loans that it's not like, you know, getting a loan for a house that you can't afford. Because, like, for example, I can't afford a house right now, so I'm not buying one. But if I was 18 and just out of high school, it's not really a thing that you do to say, well, I can't afford college right now, I'm just not going to go. You're supposed to go anyway.
Right.
And figure it out. So
to speak to the non-dischargeability of the student loans, if that provision were not in place, there wouldn't be such a thing as a student loan. Because no one would lend money to a kid with no credit and no job.
Absolutely.
Right?
Exactly. So that, how does, you know, looking at it from a voluntarist free market perspective, you have to see how these things are so connected to state power, because in a free market, nobody in their right minds would loan money out to a 17-year-old going to basketball even major, you know?
Sure. But there's something that's different here that's not so concrete. That separates, again, this student loan issue from other types of debt and default. There is this nebulous promise that comes with signing off to go into this debt. Like, this is not a situation that occurs anywhere else, right? When you go into debt for a house, you get to move into the house, right? It's not like you sign off, you go into debt, and there's no house there. Or you go do a car loan with Chase, and then there's no car there. So what you're told, and this is never really concrete, like here's the 1, 2, 3, 4 step way that it happens, but when we're, you know, declawed through this government schooling system to just accept these decrees of college is what's necessary to have a job, that nebulous promise that I spoke of is that if you do this and all of the things that come with it, there is a job waiting for you at the other end that pays for it. Go ahead.
Is that true anymore? I mean, I can understand why someone might think that 2 years ago. But, I mean, today, does anyone actually believe that they're going to get a job when they graduate from college?
But that's the problem, is because that the real world to most of these kids in high school does not exist. I hate to generalize, right? But I can speak from my experience. The conversations that I have with young people through what I do, which is pretty frequent and covers, you know, a wide range of kids from, you know, New Hampshire, Northern Massachusetts, and sometimes beyond that, I always try to put my finger on the pulse of what's going on in these schools. What are they telling you? What are you talking about? What's the interface that you're having with the outside world? The only thing that I've heard for months is that they know there's a presidential election going on, and they know there's a documentary called Kony 2012. So that's a problem. Mike, we'll hold you over one more segment so we can explore this a little more. This is School Sucks Live. We'll be right back. Everybody, this is Brett, and welcome back to School Sucks Live. Today is June 7th, 2012. We're talking about student loans and the college scam, as we're calling it. My co-hosts tonight, Corey and Osborne. Thanks again, guys, for being here. And we have a caller on the phone named Mike. Now, Mike, before we went to break there, you brought up, I think you were starting to form what is a very important question about solutions, you know, using free market voluntarist principles. Did I catch that right? Kind of slipped it in there.
Yes.
Okay. So can you expand on that for us here?
Sure. You know, basically, when you're looking at somebody in the free market, you're asking them for money, for a loan, for whatever it is, business or anything like that, they're going to want to know a couple of things. like, you know, do you have any collateral? What's your credit history like? You know, there's always a way out to a contract if they're mutually agreed upon, and they're really not voluntary if you don't have a way out. So I think looking at the system now, we see how far away it is from that voluntary society, because you can't, there's no way out. There's no, you know, there's no real investigation done on the loan company to find out whether or not you have the ability to pay off the loans in the end. And I also think one other point is, in a free market, if people are going to loan out money to students to get an education, they're going to have some interest in making sure that student goes to school for something profitable, because it's their money on the line. But when you can securitize, when you can bundle these up and sell them off and make tons of profit off of them, then you don't have any incentive whatsoever to find out anything about the student, to find out whether or not they're actually doing something that would be profitable in the end.
Now, that's interesting, because there is that the request for accountability and the establishment or proof of an ability to pay seems to be missing from this transaction. So what do you propose?
Well, you know, the first thing I propose is basically not taking out student loans. You know, if you're somebody who's 17 or 16 looking to go to college, find out alternatives. Don't put yourself in this debt situation, because it's very hard to get out of. I mean, I'm having some success here trying to get out of my situation, but it's not easy. It's a big battle to go through. But if I may, there's one point that I really want to stress here, is sure. that in 4 years of college, you don't really know what that education is worth to you, because you won't know until you get out into a real job in the real world how useful your education is. Right? If I loan to buy a house, and I buy the house and it's not really what it is, there are ways you can sell the house back to the bank. There's other things you can do. But with this, there's no way. If you find out after the 4 years that your education was worthless, as I did and so many others have, then there's no recourse. You have no way of saying, oh, wait a minute, you know, this isn't really what I signed on for.
Well, the problem really, I think, is our obedience to not only authority, but the way things are, to convention. And it was just, there was no questioning this. Like, yeah, I go to college and everything will be okay. And I think I was more dense and naive than a lot of people are. But I also think that I kind of represented the average at that point in my life, from the experiences that I've had with people who are now the age that I was when I was trying to make those decisions for myself in the mid-90s. Now, my story was that, yeah, this four-year degree is the ticket to a future. And I went to college. I was a freshman in college in 1995. My major was communications, which is, again, very broad. It's not as bad as, like, liberal arts, but it's something that it was very nonspecific, and I wasn't coming out of it a skilled worker by any stretch of the imagination. So in 1995, I enter the communications program at a college in southern Vermont, spend all this time learning about how television production works, how radio production works, and how the print media works. Or wait a minute, by 1998, I was learning about how it worked in the 80s. While the whole industry out in the real world, which I was still shielded from in this institution, was being revolutionized by the internet. So in 2000, I graduated with a degree essentially in communications, print media, television production, radio production, history. You know, like if there was some niche that I could get into, like, you know, an 80s museum for communications, I could be the curator. But I did not have useful skills for the world into which I graduated. So I certainly can sympathize with that story, Mike.
Right. And I'm in the same boat. And I went to college for something which I thought was a serious, you know, study in education of being an architect. And when I got into the real world of working in firms, I realized that the stuff I learned in school, maybe 10% of it was applicable to my career. The rest of it was not. I mean, I was actually taking a class in the art of rock and roll. I mean, that's how insane it got. You know, but I'm kind of fed up with the fraud that goes on, with the financial institutions, the so-called, you know, the banks getting away with doing all kinds of financial manipulation and then basically creating a whole generation of debt servants. And he had mentioned doing some solutions. And like I said, I think the strong thing is stressing. If we have younger siblings or younger friends, is stressing the importance of you know, instead of wasting that money and that debt for the rest of your life, you go through and take the graduation money. I got $1,000 of graduation money when I graduated high school. I could have taken that, invested it in something to start my own business back then, and probably been a lot more successful than I am right now in my career. And technology is certainly making things easier and cheaper, and looking for alternatives like that. And also stuff like your show. I've learned so much about history and education through your show and other shows on LRN than I ever had in all of my entire schooling put together.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I got to a point with some of these shows, like for me, it was, you know, Free Talk Live and Free Domain Radio, where I couldn't justify not sending them money anymore every month.
Right.
You know, considering that I had paid $60,000 for an education that was almost valueless, except from the fact that it exposed me to history, which really kind of was able to steer my career in the direction that it went, because I was also fairly directionless, even when I was in college, basing what I majored in on interests that I had when I was like 13, like, oh, you know, it'd be fun to like do the play-by-play for the Red Sox or something like that. And that was like, I didn't think about it anymore and just went to college for that.
If people had any way of knowing just how useless a lot of what they learn in college would be, colleges would just have a lot less course offerings. They wouldn't have the art of rock and roll, you know.
They would have the heart of rock and roll.
No, they would.
Which
for
is
people
still beating.
Who, college is a consumption good, not an investment good. And I think that's the principle people need to understand. And there, yes, in the free market, there would be a history of rock and roll. And only people who were interested in consuming that product would go take it. Not every single person who thought that they were investing in being productive.
Right.
Well said.
I mean, back in the day, you know, only the elites went to college, right?
Right.
And, you know, that's kind of how it should be. And people don't like that, right? Well, that's not fair. Only the rich people get to go to college. But, I mean, it's a consumption good. It is a luxury item.
But now, like, we were talking about this before, and Osborne brought up what I thought was just a brilliant point about this is what separated people before. This is what made you, and we're not talking about elites, like people looking down at everybody else and running the world, but it gave you something elite as far as education, as far as knowledge, right? It put you...
Not even that. It's just a signal that, like, hey, I'm willing to work hard at something, and this is why you should hire me.
Okay, Mike, we'll hold you a little bit more, and we're going to pick this up in a minute. I want to bring up Osborne's point. It was very important.
Excellent. Can I ask you an off-air question?
Sure. School Sucks Live. We'll be right back. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to School Sucks Live. With me tonight, Corey and Osborne. My name is Brett, and the three of us are doing a live show that you can participate in a variety of different ways. You can give us a call at 843-JOIN-SSP. We'll put you on the air with us. Or you can Skype in School Sucks Live, all one word. You can watch us at schoolsucksproject.com/live. Once you're on that page, you can also get involved in a chat with other people who are watching the live feed. And because Ustream runs on a little bit of a delay, you know what's cool, guys? You know what people can do? They can call into the show, talk to us, hang up, run back to their computer real quick, and they're going to be the one on Ustream. They can watch themselves. It's like time travel. It's nothing like time travel. It's nothing like time travel.
It's like time travel.
Yeah, yeah.
Is it more like
barely
the DeLorean from Back to the Future, or more like the hot tub in Hot Tub Time Machine?
It's like regular speed, only going forward, pretty much.
Gotcha.
It's like, I can't remember the name of the movie now, so never mind. But it was a movie where this guy built a time machine where if you wanted to go 6 hours into the past, you'd have to sit in the time machine for 6 hours.
Whoa.
It's kind of like that, but with shorter time frames.
I wouldn't be able to put up with that.
No, that'd be the worst.
No.
Well, actually,
I'd sit in a time machine for 24 hours for a guaranteed lottery win.
Was there a, I could is there a that. Toilet That's true. In the time machine?
Mm-hmm.
Is there a toilet in the time machine?
No.
A magazine rack? No.
I would crap myself twice for a guaranteed lottery win, I think.
Okay. I think you were allowed to bring a bucket.
Ooh.
Mm.
Yeah, I've never heard about that. That's interesting.
Colostomy bag.
Oh, so you had options.
Excellent.
Well,
speaking of options.
Yeah. Speaking of options.
Options of going to college or not going to college.
Way to find the tracks.
Hey.
All right, so let's bring Mike back into the conversation. Mike, before we let you go, do you have any other thoughts on this issue? I think you brought up some really good points tonight, but anything you want to say to close out your look at this topic?
Yeah, I think there's two other things I'll just briefly mention. One is the inflation of the college degree. You know, because everybody's got a college degree now, they don't mean as much as they used to. I think Osborne was mentioning that before, that, you know, you sort of, it's because everybody's got one, so it's not special anymore. And also, I think the inflation of the kinds of college courses, I'm sure somewhere there's a course on time travel, too, you know, where you could take a whole entire major off that. And then you see all these things like theoretical physicists and stuff that you can't prove any of the stuff. But I think that comes out of the fact that there's so many more people in college now than there was before.
Sure. That's what we were talking about when we got to the end of the last segment.
Right.
Like 20 years ago, you distinguished yourself in the marketplace by saying, look at my college degree. This means something about me as a person. It means I have a brain. It means I can read and write. It means I can commit to something for an extended time period. Where right now, you show up with a college degree and it just kind of means you're a dumbass. And you might actually be illiterate.
Yeah.
You stayed sober long enough to actually pass a class or two.
Right. So in this environment, the way you distinguish yourself is by doing the opposite of what everyone else is doing. You stay the hell out of college and you go start a business. Or if you do go to college, here's what you need to know. If someone is offering you free money at 0% interest, you take that money if you can do something to make more money than what you're taking.
And you know it.
And so right now, people think that they're doing this by spending it on college classes. That's not what you spend it on. If you can go to college and get someone else to pay for it, take the student loans, start a business on the side, pay those back when you're done with college, then you've got a big pile of money you can go do whatever you want with.
Right, absolutely. And you said you were in college just briefly. Mm-hmm. What did you study when you were there, Corey?
Well, let's see. The first time I tried college, I didn't really have... I mean, I was an actor at the time, so I was going for a theatrical major. But after a year, I decided I wasn't going to be an actor. It wasn't the lifestyle for me. So I went back again a few years later, did one semester. I was ostensibly a computer science major.
Yeah.
But it was going to be 2.5 years before I could even put my name on the waiting list to take a computer class.
Wow.
And that's when I decided that, you know, this is BS. And then I went to, you know, a privately owned, you know, school just to learn about computer stuff.
Yeah.
And learned what I needed to learn. And that's it. I never got anywhere near finishing college.
Now, I did because I just didn't think that there was any other option. Just like for most people, like there's no other option besides high school. So, yeah, I think that we should really just reiterate the point that Osborne made that this stuff, this information, I don't want to use the word protected, but all of this stuff that people could get from the college experience 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 50 years ago, 100 years ago, without a tremendous amount of work and resources and diligence, it was inaccessible. And now, you know, you can find this stuff while you're sitting at home. You know, it's there for anybody with an internet connection. So it doesn't have that worth anymore. And people are really paying all this money just for a lottery ticket for the job market. It doesn't guarantee anything. Maybe the odds are better than the actual lottery, but you're not guaranteed the job. And that's the difference, where these other types of debt come with a guarantee of you get something. College, you are guaranteed absolutely nothing except debt. Mike, we're going to let you go so we can take another call, but thank you very much for bringing up this issue tonight.
Right. Can I just plug my podcast?
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's podomatic.com/rantfarm, RANT farm.
Rant Farm. We will check that out. I saw in your email that you sent me, I said, that sounds fantastic. I can't believe I didn't think of that name.
It's a good name.
Rant Farm. Actually, I delete most of my rants out of my shows, but I do love a good rant. Mike, thank you so much. And
welcome, Brett.
One more time, Rant Farm.
At podomatic.com.
Okay. Thank you very much. Have a good night. Let's go to 224. You are on School Sucks Live. Who's this?
Hey, guys. This is Dan in Illinois.
Hey, Dan. How you doing?
Hey, Dan. Oh, fantastic. How you guys doing?
Terrific.
Good. Real quick, Evan, thanks very much. I finally remember this is a Thursday, and the show is on live, so I could call in or even listen.
Yeah.
But had an odd experience with Brett's show a couple of years ago. It was actually, there was the episode you were interviewing the kid from Cary Grove High School.
Yep.
And I'm listening to this on my iPod as I'm driving past Cary Grove High School.
The Trojans.
Yeah, exactly. And it was somehow you mentioned a thought balloon in that episode, and I looked up and there was a hot air balloon on the horizon. So just very strange synchronicity.
What's a thought balloon? I forget.
You know, like Snoopy thinking something over his head.
Oh, yeah. I gotcha. So, what else? Do you have any thoughts on what we're discussing tonight, this whole student loan thing?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I went through college, and which is an absolute scam. I got absolutely nothing that I couldn't have either gotten on my own for free or at a low cost without going through the added expense of college. I went to school to be a pilot. I mean, I went through this aviation flight and management course. Heck, you can learn to fly a plane at any airport. And the rest of it was absolute fluff. The people teaching the other classes knew nothing about what they were actually doing. They'd never actually done it. So, you know, I get out with all these student loans, and I did pay them off, by the way. I got a very small inheritance a number of years later and decided to just dump it as, you know, before the interest built up.
Right.
But now I'm looking at my nephews, you know, and they're being pressured, of course, in various colleges. And, you know, thankfully they're choosing so far the least expensive, but yeah, they're going to be saddled with all this debt that they're going to be, you know, the chance of them actually paying it off, God knows. Now, you guys say it's an absolute scam, and of course what the banks do is use these loans to further monetize it. So, you know, they get the loan on their books as an asset, which then they can write loans against.
Yeah, and there's really no talking to people about this. It's become about as controversial as suggesting that somebody drops out of high school. You know, this was a part of my work. I've mentioned this several times on the show before, to do this college consulting. And like, I got to a point where I was like, what can I even tell people? You know, I'm certainly not being true to what I know and what I believe about this situation. So,
yeah, I mean, something one of you guys mentioned earlier reminded me of that old Dr. Seuss story of the Sneetches.
Well, I'm going to hold you over, and we'll let you tell that in a couple minutes. Stick with us, Dan. This is School Sucks Live. If you want to get on the air, give us a call at 843-JOIN-SSP, Skype in School Sucks Live. We'll be right back. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Hour 2 of School Sucks Live. I'm Brett. I'm the host. With me tonight, Corey. How you doing?
Good.
Good. Osborne?
I'm kind of sad.
Why?
Because the show's already half over, and I feel like we just got started.
Well, we realized, let me tell you just a little, a couple of things that you should know about our show. We are on LRN.fm. Streaming is audio every Thursday night, if you're just hearing us for the first time. 10 to midnight. You can also hear that same LRN audio with video at schoolsucksproject.com/live, where you can watch us. You can see all three of us. We've got a multi-camera thing going on here. Actually spent about 4 hours today with Tony Myers and Richard Grove from tragedyandhope.com. They've done the podcast with me a bunch of times, but they're also trying to help me with some technical behind the scenes stuff with this Ustream, because they're trying to figure it out as well. And we described it as, what was my description? I thought it was fitting. As far as like, there is no teaching people how to use Ustream. There is no user manual for this software, because it'd be like trying to teach somebody how to shuffle a deck of cards and pull out the Eight of Hearts every time. Mm. You know, there's so many variables. And I think one day we'll get it.
Maybe if there were a college degree in Ustream.
Yeah, I think Ustream is symptomatic of the college degree problems, because people said, oh, I get a bachelor's degree in software design.
Sure.
And then they made Ustream.
You could just spend 4 years trying to figure out Ustream for free.
Yeah.
To have the same end result.
Isn't Ustream mainly used for porn?
No. You think so?
I thought it was.
Not until after midnight.
You think that's what's clogging our bandwidth, people watching cams?
I think it might be. I don't know. Maybe that was a different service.
Well, there's certainly no shortage of service for porn. And if you'd like to learn more about that, go to Google, type in P-O-R-N, and click enter.
Also, make sure you turn safe search off before you do that.
Tonight's show is brought to you by porn, Ustream, and e-cigarettes, and Diet Pepsi. So, anyway... what I was saying is I just wanted to thank those guys for all the help that I've gotten from them over the recent months that we've been working together on a variety of different things. But Ustream has this other problem where they pop 30-second ads into the live show. So if you find that annoying, if you want to watch us live but you can't deal with that, because we also have breaks for LRN because somebody has to pay for that. So when LRN goes to break, just refresh the Ustream live stream, an ad will play right away while LRN is in break, and then you can watch the whole segment uninterrupted. That, as I've said several times before, is merely a short-term solution, but it's the best thing to do for now to make sure that each segment of the show is uninterrupted. And is there anything else that you need to know before we go on? I think that's about it.
I think it's quite enough, Brett.
Thank you. Yeah. That covers everything. So we're going to go back to the phone. We've had Dan. He's been holding for a while, and I believe he was about to tell us a story. Dan in Illinois, you said you had a story?
Oh, I don't know about a story, but I was listening to you guys talking about, I guess, kind of like the fact that a college education has become just like a basic commodity anymore. It just kind of reminded me of that old Dr. Seuss story of the Starbelly Sneetches.
Okay.
Where there was the two Sneetches, these, you know, typical Seuss critters. One had stars in their bellies, the other ones didn't, and whichever one had the least was jealous of the ones that had, you know, the other way around. You know, they were jealous of the ones with the stars. So then some schmuck comes into town and says, hey, I'll put a star on your belly just like theirs. And they pay him the money. Well, now everybody's got a star on their belly. And they go, hey, I can take it off just like theirs. And it's just, you know, it's like, what's the next thing that they're going to say, hey, you got to have this latest thing, and you just pay me this much money, and you can get it. Because college education is, you know, is just you just check a box on an application, and no one ever asks you what you learned, what was your experience. It's just, did you get the sheepskin? That's it.
You know, another interesting thing, too, is that what you're saying, Dan, sounds like it relates a little bit to what a lot of people often call consumerism. It sounds like more of a left-wing perspective to me. But I really think the messages of state-run schooling have bled into all aspects of our society. The way people consume is, I think, a direct result of how they are miseducated. And also the service that they're willing to accept and the quality of products and services that they're willing to accept is like much lower than it should be, because people are not asserting themselves and saying, no, wait a minute. Oh, this is not the way it is. This is wrong. This is not what I paid for. I'm a customer. I want better. People don't do that. And you'll almost see
absolutely
that if you are the kind of person who's willing to make a complaint, maybe you guys have had an experience like this, about something that is subpar, oftentimes, this has happened to me a couple of times, the customer service representative, you know, will be totally outraged. Now, they try to hide it. They try to hold it back. But they're like, how dare you? When everybody else is just accepting this crappy service or this crappy product. I think that people have been tamed by their experiences, not just in the government school system, but also in college and through society, to be meek and accepting of things that do not serve their interest as well as they should, considering maybe, you know, what their expectation is for value or what their expectation is based on what they pay for something. I think that this problem, this meekness, this obedience, this acceptance and conformity has bled into all aspects of society, and it hurts the market as well. Thoughts? Right.
Well, it's difficult for me to envision it being that way, because apart from, you know, knowing computer stuff, I spent a lot of years as a tech support agent or a customer service support agent working over the phone. The problem is, from my perspective, I would say, you know, everybody is trying to get something for nothing, and their tactic for doing it is to call up some customer service person and scream at them until they get their way. But then again, those meek and obedient people that you're talking about, they don't call customer service at all.
You're right. Yeah.
You know, they just go, oh, well, the service sucks. I guess, you know, that's what you get for paying what I pay.
Yeah.
Well, and again, the fact that they have the monopoly on the product, you know, more or less is the problem, too. Because, you know, at the state college, you can say, you can complain, and they'll say, well, fine, go to Harvard, you know?
Yeah,
exactly.
You can't afford the state college. How are you going to go somewhere out of state?
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, we have the pen, the golden pen, signs the golden paper. And that's, you know, if you want it, then just suck it up.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'll let you guys get going. I appreciate taking my call. And again, thanks for all you do. I'll get back to listening.
Oh, our pleasure, Dan. Thank you very much for your call. We're going to go to 914 in just a minute here. But Osborne, you had a thought before we do?
Man, I don't even remember, dude.
It was only like 30 seconds ago.
Yeah. So I think there's no proper training in how to deal with another human being in a rational manner, right? That's why you see these two extremes. Mm. Either you're just going to shut up and go, you know, go along to get along,
right?
Or you've got just crazy antisocial jackass, you know, just throwing a fit, and
it's really nothing in between.
There's no metering of it. So right. You said you never heard from any of these people, Corey, because right. They're like, oh, well, you know, and then everybody else is maybe outraged to the point where they want more than what they paid for, or they paid for nothing.
I mean, I could tell you some really ridiculous stories about what people got away with just by abusing customer service reps, but it's probably a whole different topic, possibly even for a different show.
You know who is very demanding of customer service, just from my experience, and this might be just like a very isolated example? People on welfare. Mm. Very high expectations of everybody else.
Mm.
So, all right, we're going to go back to the phone. 914, you're on School Sucks Live. Who's this? How can we help you?
Hey, this is John from New York. How are you doing, guys?
Hey, John, how are you?
Pretty good, thanks. I wanted to go back to you made a point earlier about, you know, that the idea of dropping out of college is really not, or it is on par with dropping out of high school.
Yeah.
I teach middle school. And
drop out of that too.
John, hold that thought for a minute. We'll bring you right back. Everybody, welcome back to School Sucks Live. I'm Brett. My co-hosts tonight are Corey and Osborne. We have spent most of the show talking about the college scam and student loan debt. We are happy to move in new directions, but your calls will dictate those directions. You can make them at 843-JOIN-SSP. You can also Skype in at School Sucks Live. You know, we were just kind of getting sad here because we noticed that the show cruising right along. I think we have a little bit more than a half an hour left. That might be three full segments. But the good news is that after we are off LRN at midnight, we have a habit. It's more than a habit now. It's kind of a commitment of continuing beyond midnight, doing a video stream show only. It is called the After School Sucks Special. We open it up. We can talk about anything. The topics do not have to be educational. If you have heard any of the past ones, you know that they are not very educational discussions, but they can be. They can be whatever you want.
Or particularly family friendly.
Not family friendly at all. No.
No.
No, no.
That's why it's after midnight.
After midnight. Nothing. Yes. No one under 14 should be up. What do you think? What do you think's a good cutoff age for that? I'm not to set a cutoff age arbitrarily.
I don't know. My 5-year-old daughter is already staying up almost to midnight, so I don't know.
Mom well, has her tucked in.
Do we need a cutoff age just because of the time or because of the content?
Because of the content, yeah, I would say. Because there are children in Poland and China and other places.
It might be the middle of the day for them.
Yeah, and they're just getting home from school.
Maybe they're listening to us to learn how to speak English.
Oh, no.
Won't that be a fright?
Yeah. Very strong language on this show, but it's called the After School Sucks Special. If you miss them all, it's been some magic moments in live streaming video. So you can get access to them this July when we launch the new SchoolSucksProject.com website. In a bonus content section, do you guys know what the bonus content section of the new website is going to be called?
Not a clue.
No.
I'm going to call it the AV Club.
Oh, quite right.
Remember the AV Club?
I thought
in
you might call it the bonus content section.
You are aware that The Onion also refers to their section in similar.
The Onion AV Club.
Are you kidding me?
Kid you not, sir.
They review movies and TV shows and stuff.
Why wasn't I told?
Sorry.
I thought it was the most brilliant name because AV, A/V, is audio and video. That's what's in the bonus content section.
Well, if it's the School Sucks Audio Video Club, then I guess it's different.
Maybe I should call it the Audio Video Club.
SAV.
But AV Club also had that stigma of being for nerds, you know, in school, which I thought it was great because...
Those are the kids who got to run the projector when it was time to watch a movie in class.
Absolutely. Well, I'm devastated. What are we going to do? If you have an idea for name of the new School Sucks bonus content section, give us a call, 843-JOIN-SSP, or send me an email, because now I need a name, and that's getting close. That site's going to be done soon. Tony, our webmaster, is out in California working very hard on that. He's doing a fantastic job. You can look at these on-screen graphics that we have. That's Tony. I've enhanced them a little bit for the broadcast, but this was his concept, and I think it's a much more positive logo than what we were using previously. Let's go back to John, who is in. John, I want to say New York.
That's correct.
And you're a teacher. We've heard from you a couple times. I appreciate you participating in the show because, man, did I try to hunt down some public school teachers for a long time. And they banned me from their forums, and they wrote me nasty emails, and they didn't want anything to do with me. So I'm glad that you're not only open to these ideas, but you're willing to participate in our discussion. So thank you very much. What were you, before we had to break there, you were getting into what you wanted to talk about. So why don't you go ahead?
Sure. I teach middle school, so that's, 6, 7, 8 grades. And you're talking about how, just to sort of recap, we're talking about how the idea of dropping out of college and is almost anathema, like dropping out of high school would have been. Well, these kids in middle school coming in sixth grade are being told by our building administrators that they are the class of 2022. Now, a quick check of the math means that they are actually including 4 years of college in that entire education presumption. So, this is basically giving them their 10-year sentence at that point. Saying, you thought you were going to be done after 12th grade. To think again, boys and girls. Everything is now, let's get as many of you off to college as possible.
Yeah, and the subtext is that you're a failure, right? Because if I was the class of 95 and I was done with school in 94, by everything that I knew, I failed at school. So now if anybody is out of school before that date that tacks on the 4 years of college, what's implied in that is their failure pretty much, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, now rather than being someone who just didn't enroll in college, now they're equivalent to a dropout.
Right, right.
Where they should feel like they're better than everyone else because they finished early.
That's right.
It's absolutely true, yeah. I was just saying, I was putting together the podcast for our last live show, and we were talking about this girl, Diane Tran, who got punished for being an honor student but having bad attendance, right? Or not being, she didn't get punished for being an honor student, but for, not always showing up at school, for being basically truant or overly tardy. But she was still performing above average in school. Now, in the real world where people live, that's like a very desirable skill to be able to do the same quality work as everybody else, if not higher quality work than everybody else in less time. But for her, there was no accommodation, and she actually wound up being punished.
That sort of thing is usually appreciated by everyone but your coworkers.
When you're a bureaucrat or in a union.
Right.
Exactly. So,
well, I actually finished high school in 3 years, and you know, I take extra courses here and there to try to get done as soon as I possibly could to get out of it. I knew what I wanted to do after. I went off to college for music, and I had a person I wanted to study with. You know, I had a really clear direction, but the high school fought me left, you know, at every turn. If it weren't for the fact that my father taught at that school and was basically not going to take any crap from them, I would have had to stay there at least. Well, I'm originally from Canada, so I would have had to stay there an extra 2 years because they had the grade 13 at that point, which would have been completely useless to me coming down to the States anyway. But they didn't want anybody getting out of there anytime sooner than the legal limit, basically.
Right. You know, I'm interested to get your thoughts on this because, you know, you're teaching kids at kind of a crucial time. And what was the subject? You said you're a music teacher before, right?
That's correct.
Okay. So this, I think, is a crucial time for young people to be learning some skills because, like, I'm not into the whole pressuring people to learn to read or, you know, then they have to follow a certain routine or certain timetables to do those things and to have that stuff be more self-directed. Like, somebody doesn't have to learn to read when they're five, but by the time they get to be 10, 11, they should have some basic reading and writing skills, and they should certainly, have some math skills just for the sake of survival and understanding the world that they're beginning to participate in. But I have one more question for you, John, before we let you go, about what kids are being taught with respect to math and economics in these schools, because there's one more aspect of this student loan thing that I want to cover. This is School Sucks Live, 843 Join SSP. We'll be right back.
You can put the Liberty Radio Network on the air in your area. Visit broadcast.lrn.fm to learn how. Broadcast.lrn.fm.
Hey, everybody, this is Brett, and welcome back to School Sucks Live. With me tonight, Corey and Osborne, and we've been discussing college and student loans, but there's one very important aspect of the story that we haven't gotten to yet, and that's the signal that is sent to private institutions by the availability of all of this easy money. We happen to have a middle school teacher on the phone with us.
I'm still here.
All right. In the work that I do, even if there's times where, you know, I'm seeking information that's kind of unrelated to the purpose, I get curious. I want to see what's going on. I want to get a sense of what's being discussed, what's being done, what's not being done, rather, in these high schools. Do you ever, this awareness that you have maybe about what's going on in the schools, does that ever lead you to doing any investigations, around the school, see what's going on in other departments, see what kids are being told or taught or not taught?
Oh, sure, all the time. Yeah, it's considered, collaborative. So it's a mark of a good teacher to see what's going on in other subjects. I do it for my own curiosity as well, but, I don't like to teach in an isolated fashion. So I see what's going on.
Tell us about the last time you were completely horrified by something that you saw.
I have to say it was, I think I mentioned something about the un-American social studies teacher incident a couple weeks ago.
Breaking the law is un-American.
Yeah, exactly. If you break a law, you're un-American. And that was a really glib way of describing it. Of course, left all the kids completely without any real basis of defining the term. I see a lot of stuff that you were mentioning economics, that the idea that at middle school level, they're not really taught
economic theories per se, but they do see them in context. And the idea that there could ever be mutually beneficial exchange, like a voluntary exchange where everybody is prospering as a result, they don't get that sense. They see history as exploitation and conflict. They never see that two people could just make a decision to, you know, to talk or to trade something and both come away winners. They don't get that sense at all.
Yeah, well, when you're 11 and 12 years old and you're years away from being able to have a job or have a license and you're in this sort of awkward period of physical development in your life, and it's school 5 days a week where you march in with your 40-pound backpack and fill out worksheets and then have church on Sundays, what the hell does voluntary mean? When you're not living in a world that even resembles voluntary interactions, maybe outside of peers, but of course, because of that poisonous social environment, we also see that there's a lot of force or the perception of force in that setting as well, where kids are doing things kind of for social survival at that mm-hmm. age. And, you know, from the time that I spent in middle school as a tutor, I used to go into the schools and meet with kids because it was more convenient for them or their families. I found that it was a very unhealthy social setting. People just running through the halls screaming. It looked like I would go in at the end of the day and it would look like a prison break. You know, I mean, fittingly, I guess. But yeah, the economics question was, I think to have a real full understanding of the fact that we live in a world that has economic rules, it would be good to start getting some of that education at that age.
Now, speaking of economics,
oh, I agree.
And to John's point here, even in the study of economics itself, it's a high degree of concentration on the concept of competition, mm-hmm. right? Whereas in the real world, the story of the marketplace is not nearly so much one of competition as it is of cooperation, right? In your daily life, there's not much that you're doing that's, you know, competing against someone else to try to get something that they're trying to get. It's how do you work together with other people to get both of you what you want?
Yeah, and I think, well, that probably, do you think there's any variance in that from industry to industry? Like some industries are more cutthroat, that it's more at the other guy's expense.
I guarantee you that it is much more pronounced in areas that are highly regulated and controlled by the state.
Okay.
Right? For example, in my line of work, to fight over who gets to collect these student loans,
yeah,
there's just a huge amount of rent seeking and loss associated with trying to get that you know, blessing from the state to be able to do that.
Sure.
Whereas in some, you know, other making microchips, right? Not so much regulation at all. And you're probably not really fighting that much with other people.
So we see a lot more of these. I think that's a great point. And I think we see a lot more of these violent interactions in these industries that are very influenced by the state. So what are the most regulated industries in our country? Well, things that are, we have the automotive sector with the unions and the pitches that they made recently. Michigan, obviously the big one. We had the union situation in Wisconsin over the last couple of years. That's education, also highly regulated. Healthcare, another very unionized sector. And really the financial sector, Wall Street, a lot of real cutthroat behavior. I get mine at the other guy's expense, and I would say a minimal amount of cooperation compared to what you're talking about in these other industries.
I mean, you cannot go start a financial institution. It is beyond your ability to be able to do.
No.
Because you have to get yourself so deeply involved inside of the state that you won't ever be able to get back out.
And you also have to kind of be part of networks that have existed now for, you know, a long time in this country. And they like certain schools for those people. You know, Chomsky, who I'm not certainly in concert with on a variety of economic issues, but, you know, he talked about how these Ivy League schools were being used to groom people to learn this fuzzy, you know, fake math that would be great for ripping people off and making it look like it was justifiable. And this was Chomsky talking 10, 15 years ago. And when we see what happened in 2007, 2008, 2009, it certainly became true for anyone who was paying attention to that whole situation. But, you know, the real question, John, is like, there is no economics education in these middle schools, correct?
Correct. Yeah.
I think that what's missing and what a fact that I've tried to explain to adults and they found completely incomprehensible was that when the government floods a bunch of easy money into an industry, the people who set prices in that industry receive a signal that they can jack up the prices. So where we see these highly regulated, lots of state involvement in certain industries, we see prices that are out of control and increase disproportionately with everything else in the economy. And that is, for the most part, healthcare and higher education.
And home prices, right? Same concept.
Okay. And the state is, obviously, we saw that the tone for that industry was being set by these quasi-private organizations like Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac.
Sure. And they set the interest rates at an artificially low level, going to jack up the prices of the houses. And they make those loans easier to get than they rightfully should be. And that, again, causes an artificial increase in the prices of the houses.
Absolutely. John, any other thoughts before we let you go tonight?
I just want to add to that very last point Osborne made, because the school system plays the same game. I mean, it's all about the number of students. So, you know, our district is a Title I district, so we've got to have a certain level of poverty, a certain level of failure in order to succeed. It's ridiculous.
Absolutely. John, thank you so much for your call. This is School Sucks Live, 843-JOIN-SSP. You can also Skype in School Sucks Live. We'll be back in a couple minutes. Stick with us. Everybody, this is Brett, and welcome back to School Sucks Live. This is our last segment of the regular show. With me tonight, Corey and Osborne. Guys, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. And most of the show tonight has been dominated by this college discussion. And I think there's one more thing that's worth covering here. We were talking about this a little bit earlier off air that, you know, I think when most kids graduate from high school, since they don't really remember anything they learned, maybe some basic reading, some basic writing, some basic math, a handful of formulas that they don't plan to use in the rest of their lives, they understand that they're still unfinished educationally. They still are pretty much, in many cases, you know, looking forward to a career, learning a skill. They realize that they're pretty much blank slates. I think that's fair to say. When these kids who are, you know, trained to trust authority go and have a year or two of college, boy, a lot changes. They come home and now they're finished. They know everything. Economics, history, what else are they teaching in college?
You're asking the wrong guy.
That's true. But economics, of course, is a big one. Psychology, philosophy. They say, oh, well, you know, I had a professor, he has written some books and very, you know, authoritative and convincing, and I have no real critical thinking skills to speak of. So, but, you know, he transmitted information to me, so now I have his wisdom, and you're a dumbass, and I'll tell you about how the world actually works. There's this guy named John Maynard Keynes, blah, blah, blah. I think that college is a real nailing of the coffin shut as far as free thinking is concerned, and most people never really recover. Their belief system is formed, and even if it does a total 180, you know, and at 20 they're a liberal and at 30 they're a conservative, they're still going to be very firm in those beliefs, and they don't like entertaining the idea that there might be more to learn, because that implies more work, you know, and that they've been wrong the entire time. So I think that college can also be dangerous, if I may go ahead and agree with Senator Rick Santorum here for a minute, who also pointed out the dangers of college. I think because of science, he was worried about the science that's going on there.
And they have gay people.
Really?
Gays and science.
He was more worried about science than, you know, than it being a liberal indoctrination machine, for example. Not necessarily what I think of it, but
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I think that those are two aspects that turn conservatives off to college, and I hope we don't get pulled in with them. I think we've pursued college critique from a variety of different angles. I think there is science that is political, certainly, you know, as far as how it's taught, as far as what information is amplified and what information is left out in certain areas. And that's something that, I mean, science has been used ever since people said, hey, let's do science instead of crazy mysticism. Science has been used by powerful people to try and justify the course that power takes. So they tried to use science and psychology to justify the existence of slavery.
Sure.
So science can be very political. But if thinking isn't turned off enough by the 12-year experience of government schooling, college is really, you know, like a finishing move for a lot of kids. Not for everybody. For some people, it might open up their minds to the world. For me, in that respect, it was generally a positive experience, even though I didn't get any usable skills out of it. But I wanted to end the show tonight with a video that was posted on Freeman TV. This is a YouTube channel out in Keene that is put together by a guy named Derek, who is a liberty activist. And a few months ago, we went up to Keene State College and we interviewed, or he interviewed, students who had tried to set up a protest because some people had gone up there to protest the idea that guns were banned from this public property campus. So students, egged on by one of their teachers, organized a counter-protest that we didn't discover until this video. You'll see what happened. But the teacher was actually directing these students to do this. And I remember watching this scene because I was right there while Derek was filming this, and it was like watching zombies, the way these students just followed this teacher. So this is from Keene State College. This was about 8 months ago. This was a protest organized by Bradley Jardis. And what the protest was designed to do was to raise awareness about the fact that Keene had somehow found it justifiable to ban basically people's, I don't want to call it a Second Amendment right, but that's how it's framed in political terms, the right to protect themselves, the liberty to protect themselves on what was considered to be public property. So this is what was discovered.
Hi, I'm recording for the Shire Free Press.
Oh, sure.
Just wondering if you'd like to comment on your sign here.
Well, it was made by Robin DeRosa, one of my faculty members.
Now, at this point, I just want to stop the video because he says it was made by Robin DeRosa. The sign that he's holding was made by Robin DeRosa, one of my faculty members. Now, he seems very willing to share all of the details of what they're doing with Derek behind the camera. Yes? Okay.
What an odd way to refer to one of your teachers, one of my faculty members. Is that nomenclature that is used today?
Why wouldn't it be? Or would you say my professor?
I don't know.
I would.
Or one of the professors? Or I don't know. I'd never heard a kid talk like that.
Well, she might not be a professor, and you know, she could be an adjunct or an assistant professor, part-time person. I mean, not everybody who's you know, teaching or at the front of one of these rooms is technically a professor.
It just sounds like a really weirdly formal thing for a kid to say.
I don't know. Odd.
All right. So he seems very willing to engage and explain what he's doing, this young man who obviously I feel kind of bad for him, so he'll remain nameless in this video.
I think it kind of sums up my point. Please don't bring guns onto my campus.
What's your concern?
I'm concerned about exactly what just happened at Virginia Tech. I'm concerned that our really, really safe campus is going to be kind of demolished and just have a whole different feel about it. It's a very holy place to be, and I just don't think it should be just infected with guns all around.
So now we can see the professor in the video. And the title of this video is PSU English Professor Censors Protest. If you want to search YouTube and watch it yourself, we just see her lurking in the background. And she's off camera to the left, and she's about to get involved.
On campus.
Is everyone with a gun a bad guy?
No, not at all. The hunters are great, and people that...
But we don't really feel safe talking today, so we might want...
Now she looks at him in the eye, and she says... Now, we really don't feel safe talking today. Well, she's talking to Derek, but she's looking at the kid while she's saying this. In other words, shut up. You're saying the wrong things. And now it's time to be quiet. Like, you remember how you learned to do in second grade when we were lining up for lunch? Mm-hmm. Now it's time to exercise that skill that you learned then.
We're having a silent protest, so we hope that you'll respect that.
Excuse me, who are you?
Some literature?
I'm recording for the Shire Free Press.
Would you like some literature?
Sure. Who are you?
We're having a silent protest today. Thank you.
Well, I was just talking to this gentleman. Would you like to give me your name?
Yes, Josh.
I'm just going to talk over his name. So
that's great. And does this woman own you, or are you speaking for yourself today?
We're having a silent protest.
Okay. Well, why the change? Were you not having a silent protest earlier, and now you are?
It's just early in the morning.
Why no reporter?
Okay. Well, have a great day.
So he walks around a little bit. At one point, I went up and tried to do a silly little thing while somebody was rolling video on me, and they were doing a silent protest. So I said, okay, well, just by a show of hands, name your favorite gun control policy. And I started listing, like, North Korea. Raise your hand for North Korea. Anyway, this has been School Sucks Live. With me today has been Corey. Corey, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And Osborne.
Thank you as well, sir.
We're going to take a 5-minute break, and then you can catch us at schoolsucksproject.com/live for the After School Sucks special. Thank you for listening, and take care.